Hello, this is Tom Heck with TeachMeTeamwork.com, and on the line with us today is Lori Beth Jones, who is the author of multiple national bestsellers. The first is Jesus CEO, Using Ancient Wisdom for Visionary Leadership, and the book that followed that, The Path, Creating Your Mission for Work and for Life, and most recently, Teach Your Team to Fish. And all of these books revolve around the spiritual dimension and how we can involve that in team and leadership development and in personal development. And Lori Beth, I'd like to welcome you to the call.
Well, thank you, Tom. I'm excited to be talking with you.
Well, the listeners here are, as we talked before this recording, are interested in, and they all work with teams. And one of the things that I love about your work is that you bring in a spiritual dimension, and encourage people to get involved with their spiritual life at work, in teams. And I'm wondering if you can talk a little bit about that and maybe address this issue of, is it possible to have a successful team without involving our spiritual lives?
Well, it's, you know, we are so often aware of the equation mind, body, spirit, and yet in reality, most of the time we function on two of those three levels.
Mm.
We think our mind and body is everything, and yet the spiritual aspect is how we came to be and where we will eventually go. So it's the longest lasting thread in everything that we do. So it makes sense that we would pay more attention to that. In fact, I remember having a conversation with my sister one time, and we were talking about, you know, what would you do if you knew you only had 6 healthy months left to live?
Wow.
Which is a great question, and it's an orienting question for me that I ask myself probably every 2 weeks, just to make sure that my priorities are set up correctly. And she said, well, I think I would just dive into my spiritual life. I would, you know, she's Catholic, I would be going to Mass, I would be in prayers. And I said, well, that's interesting. Why? And she said, because that's where I'm going to be, so I'd start preparing the way. And if only we could realize that that's where we are at any moment. And, you know, you and I were talking about this before the taping, and you were saying that you had said a prayer and a meditation before calling, and I just love that because it means you're a centered vessel, and when you're a centered vessel, then spiritual truths can flow. I believe that God is just searching the world, saying, who can I send? You know, who will listen? I need a receiver down there, and I will, you know, fill you with wisdom and truth and light, and you can spread that to become the light of the world. But someone's got to open up, turn on the station, you know, and just start receiving. So, yes, I believe it's vital to everything we do, and so often we leave it for one day a week, if that.
Yes. Well, what are the benefits of, you've worked with lots of teams, with lots of individuals around the world, and I'm sure that you've seen some patterns that you could probably suggest. So if I presented a team to you that either lacked a spiritual focus or did not involve that aspect of their lives in the work that they were doing, whether it's a classroom teacher or a CEO of a company or a police officer, what happens when that is lacking in their lives as far as working with the people they're serving? And what happens when that spiritual aspect is present in their work?
Well, in my book, Teach Your Team to Fish, I came up with 4 observations, and it has become, in fact, I'm working on it now as a diagnostic tool, because as I traveled the country and worked with everyone from CEOs of large 15,000 healthcare entities down to small startup businesses and teachers as well. There were 4 components in team building that seemed to be common. And the first one is excitement. You know, think fire based on the elements. And also my work is already, as you know, based around spiritual principles. So
yes.
When I look at Jesus as the role model of a team builder, because he was very successful at that, the first thing he did was he excited the team. you know, follow me and I will make you fishers of men. Let's look at the big picture. I'm going to take what you're doing right now in your daily life and we're going to expand that exponentially into the universe. And people got excited about that. So the first element of team building, I think, is to excite the team about the bigger picture. This is what we can do together. We can change the world. We can set our country free. We can set a nation free. We can change the lives of children in our community. What is the big picture? Because that excitement is kind of like lighting the pilot light in each individual.
Is this the part of the visionary leader?
Yes. Very well spoken. Very well said. I remember speaking at a church in Harlem in New York, and the limousine driver picked me up and started telling me how excited he was about the church and what they were doing and where we were going. And then he dropped me off, and the security guard, you know, led me to the pastor's office, and he was telling me about the church and where this was going to go. And then I went into the restroom, and there were two little girls practicing for a play, and I asked what they were doing, and they were practicing for the Wiz, I guess, or the Oz, or whatever it was.
Yes.
And they said, the little girl said, you know, we're going to have a drama center on the campus. And I was just amazed that everyone from the limo driver to the security guard to the children knew the vision of that organization. They were excited about it. So when you have true excitement, you can kind of press any person on the team and they can be like a recording of what is going to happen.
And they share that excitement.
Exactly. That's when you get exponential growth in a team and bonding, and because they're all moving towards the same thing. People love to be part of a team. I mean, look at our sports leagues, and you've got fans who will paint their belly and expose themselves on national TV. They're not on the field.
Right.
But they feel like they're part of a team. They're excited somehow about a bigger picture, hopefully. So,
and does this also act conversely? People get excited and say, I want to be a part of that, and then other people, once the vision becomes clear and communicated, some people might say, well, this is not what I want to do.
Exactly. And you need that. You want that. I remember one of our past facilitators, Billy Bob, in the South, he did a PATH workshop, and the PATH is my second book, as you know, about how to get clear about your mission and vision.
Yes.
And there was a startup company with seven people, and he took them each through their individual mission statement. And the leader of the firm, you know, laid out the vision of where he wanted to go with the firm. And at the end of the two-day workshop, five of the people quit.
Wow.
And Billy Bob called. He said, Larry Beth, he said, do you think I can get a letter of recommendation for that team? Billy Bob, you might just wait 30 days before you call him. And 30 days later, he got a letter from the CEO, who, of course, had been devastated.
Yes.
But he said it was the best thing that could have happened, because imagine if he had gone forward with five out of seven people who didn't have the same vision. It would have cost him tremendously.
Hmm.
So the first thing you want to do is lay out the big picture, and then the second thing that you want to do is ground them. So number one, excite them, think fire. Number two, ground them. Think earth. And of course, my example of Jesus and grounding them was, he said, okay, this is where we're going, and this is what it's going to cost you. You won't have a place to sleep. People are going to persecute you. They're going to spit at you. They're going to call you names. You know, they might even kill you. Now, who still is on the team? And a lot of people fell away. But again, he was at that, he knew that it was better to go forward with 12 or even 11. He had staffing problems too, you know, as I joke. But better to go forward with a few committed than many who are mediocre. So in the grounding is where you lay out specifically, this is what it's going to take. This is what might happen. And I see that's a real weakness in teams, because we tend to recruit with the benefits. You know, we're going to have parties, we're going to make a lot of money, you know, this. And then the first instant when something doesn't go right, everybody's alarmed and their energy goes into defensive mode or fear. But Jesus said, I tell you this now so that when it happens, you will not fall away. And as you know, I love horses. One of the top trainers in the country is a trainer named John Pirelli. and there is a picture in a horse magazine of one of his horses, and he's sitting on the horse with no bridle and no saddle. The horse has his ears pointed forward, which means high interest and alertness, and there's a helicopter hovering 20 feet overhead and people running at this horse with umbrellas.
Oh, my gosh.
And the horse is just standing still and calm and poised. And I just love that image, because when you're a team leader and you have grounded your people, the first time a helicopter comes or someone runs at them with an umbrella, they're not going to spook and unseat you.
Right.
You know, they will keep moving forward. So that's the second dynamic. The third dynamic is transformation. Think water. He transforms them. And the question I ask is, how are people going to be different as a result of being with you? You know, are you just a revolving door where they come in wearing one outfit and leave wearing the same outfit, but maybe with a paycheck or a degree? Or is there some true transformation that takes place?
Now, this is a shift for some, I would imagine, because I would think that most businesses are saying, here's how we're going to help the customer. Or here's how we're going to help our students. It's not usually about here's how we're going to change as a staff or as a person.
Well, you just hit it on the head, Tom. If I could convey one thing in all of my work, it is if you pour yourself into your immediate 12, they will go out and change the world. And Jesus never taught that the customer comes first. That was what was so radical about him. He put everything into his team, defending them even when they were wrong, which is counter to what most leadership does. They blame and try to distance themselves. And even when they came for him to crucify him, they grabbed the wrong people. And he stepped forward. He said, no, I'm the one you want. Let them go. And imagine if we had management that was like that, that saw themselves being willing to sacrifice for the team and saw their work, their most important work, as developing their people.
It's sort of counterintuitive that I'm sure many a business person listening to this will think, well, I've always focused on the delivery of product to the customer, the customer comes number one, is the number one focus. But you're saying that's not the case.
Exactly. If you really want to have an effective team, you pour your energies into them, even when they're wrong. Stick with them, and they will stick with you, and go out and do the transformational work. The whole point of having a team is to leverage your talents and gifts and to make a vision happen.
Yes.
So even Jesus, with all this divine power, knew that he couldn't do it without a team. The first thing he did when he got clear about his mission and vision was he went out and recruited a team.
Wow.
And another thing that I like to point out, which is kind of encouraging to team builders, I think, is that when you look at his team, they did not perform one miracle in his presence. They kept messing up, and it was only after he left that they really caught on. And so what I tell people in your transformational work with teams, don't be discouraged if they don't seem to get it right away. Once you leave, they probably will.
That's an interesting insight. And so do you see this also being applied in actual teams, even in a classroom? I know, for example, there are many a classroom teacher who experience frustration and then lo and behold, years later, maybe a student comes back and says, look what happened.
Absolutely. You never know. And the thing about transformation is that people shy away from it because they think it's going to take so long. But transformation can happen in a moment. And it can happen in such a way that you just elevate the dialogue with someone, like the story of the woman at the well. She just came to get a drink of water.
Right.
Basically a water cooler conversation. And he started talking to her about her life and what she wanted to do with it and where she was going and how she could be part of something that was changing the world. And she, after a minute and a half of dialogue, dropped her bucket, ran and got all of her friends and became the first evangelist, if you will. So what I tell people is, it can happen in a moment. If you were centered, like you said, you know, you start your day with prayer and focus, and you meet someone, you can elevate the dialogue at a water cooler or with a child and have their life be changed. One of our PATH facilitators in Indiana is a man named Charlie Waldo. He's a PhD professor who's now retired, and he's working with kids in the inner city. And he said that he was just so taken by, you know, what their futures were going to be. He could tell, based on their current family situation, that many of them might not even make it through high school, much less college. So these are kids in the first and second grade.
Wow.
So he started a project where he would take them one by one out into the hall, and he'd kneel down and he'd say, "You know what, James?" He said, "I have a magic computer, and it tells me where you're going to be in 20 years. And I can tell you, you are going to graduate from college, you're going to have a very happy marriage, and you're going to be running a business." And he said the kids just light up. You know, and he customizes it to each child.
Right.
But he's giving them, in essence, a positive prophecy that becomes a reference point for them that they can now aim towards. And he said now all the kids in the school are saying that they want time with Dr. Waldo.
Wow.
So that's a way that he is transformed. And yes, by the way, he also reads them Jack and Jill. But in those moments of transformation, he's giving them something to hang their hat on as the years go by. So
yes.
that's the transformation piece. And then the final piece is release, think wind. So we have the four components. Excite them with fire, ground them with earth, transform them like water. You know, water changes everything that it touches.
Yes.
It makes it become more of what it already was, if it's a living thing. And if it's a dead thing, it helps it rot away.
Right.
So with wind and the release component, that's when your work is done. And you say, now go and do what I've taught you to do.
So there's a completion aspect of this.
I've got morning throat here.
what is the relationship, though? This thought comes to mind is the relationship between the release and the relationship, the relationship between continued relationship. I know that your next book is, that you're working on now, your eighth book, is on coaching.
Right.
And which is a longer-term relationship.
Right.
So how do those two relate, the letting go and yet still keeping some kind of relationship?
Boy, that's what Al-Anon is all about, isn't it?
Right. Going through finishing the 12 steps and
right.
What's next.
Right. So the release aspect is you release them to be all that they can be in terms of the Army motto. And interestingly enough, Annapolis, at the United States Naval Academy, I was there last week, and they are now working on incorporating a portion of the PATH workshop into their leadership development
training. That's great.
Isn't that wonderful? Because what they are seeing is that, you know, they train what they call the plebes.
Yes, first year.
Right. And then they have 4 years or 6 years to train them. And then they release them. And they're saying, it's one thing to be released into the military, but then after their 20 years, then they have to be released again.
Yes.
You know, into the civilian life. And that unless these people have a clear mission about what their life is about beyond the military, they will be lost.
Hmm.
So that release aspect is, and what could be more structured and short-term than the military? Because I was talking to one man, and he said, you know, we're taught, what is your mission? To be an officer, sir.
Mm.
Now what, you become an officer. What is your mission? To get the best ship, sir. So, but then, it's like, now, okay, we don't need you anymore. Goodbye. What is your mission? I have no idea, sir. And guess what? Nobody's going to salute you when you walk out of here either.
Right.
So getting that mission orientation is very important. And the release aspect is trusting them to go with it. And that's one of the things that leaders have such a hard time with, whether it's a military officer releasing men into the field or men and women now in our military today, or if it's a teacher saying goodbye to a student they know is going to have a hard time, you know, just in life based on their family situation, or a parent taking their child to school, or a CEO, you know, leaving the team to do what they need to do. And as I worked with at the different levels, you know, the CEOs many times they say, we can't get our people engaged, you know, help us get them engaged. Well, to me that's an excitement problem. That's, you know, I use the excite, ground, transform and release as a diagnostic tool.
Yes.
And then I talk with the people in the front lines and they say, you know what, we know what to do. They won't set us free to do it. They're always micromanaging.
The release.
That's a release problem. So now, whenever I encounter a situation, I look for those four components and I have a dialogue with them. I said, now would you say this is an excitement problem, a grounding problem, a transformation problem, or a release? And it's usually one. I mean, it's always one of those four. Sometimes it's two out of the four.
Yes.
But it really helps people get clear quickly about what needs to be done in order to make a shift in the team.
Wow, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
I would imagine that the release aspect is difficult. I know I'm reminded of a time when I worked for the YMCA. I helped run a program, a team leadership program that was revolved around environmental service.
Right.
And we were going to do a big tree planting and invite all these different students from high schools. And one of the it was going to happen on a Saturday morning, and then we're going to finish it off by eating pizza. Well, one of the students on the leadership committee said, I'll take care of that. Well, anybody who's worked with teens knows the importance of pizza. If it's not there, you've got big problems.
Right.
And so I was so reluctant, Lori Beth, to say, okay, you take care of the pizza.
This is a missing component.
Yeah, because if that didn't happen, it wasn't going to be good. And lo and behold, he came through, but the heart, I don't think it was hard for him at all. He just did what he had to do. It was hard for me.
Yes.
I was so attached to it.
Because, you know, as the leader, you make up the gaps or the shortfalls, and it was just, it's hard. It is very hard. But that is when you know you've got a team.
So is that the part that involves the trust and the faith?
Yes.
Where does that come in?
Yes. I think that is the hardest part of trusting, to let them go.
So what is probably the key understanding that someone's got to get out of these four steps? If you had your choice to wave your magic wand and say, anyone listening to this recording has got to understand this about working with teams or leading teams, and maybe these four, you've mentioned these four steps or four components, what's the key understanding they've got to get?
Well, the first thing is they have to know their own mission in life.
Yes.
Because the true mark of a leader is that you may have to stand alone. So we often think that leaders are identified because they have all these followers, but many times when you see a person who's willing to take a stand that is unpopular and everybody runs from it, that's a leader.
So knowing your mission is number one.
Yes. And then having a vision that is about the bigger picture. You know, are you really? I remember I saw a truck and it was a plumbing service. It was like a plumber's truck.
Yes.
And their slogan was helping your life flow more smoothly. It's just great. And somehow they tapped into what they're really about.
Yes.
And that's what leaders need to do. That, you know, what is it? You know, why are you? And I'll ask you, Tom, why are you doing this interview? Why are you going to all this trouble to have this website and get the message out to people in Singapore and Switzerland and India, as well as the United States?
For me, it's about creating a connection worldwide and supporting a consciousness of of team, which for me is about win-win. Everybody, that we can all do this together. And I think if there was ever a time that we need to look at our relationships worldwide, now is the time to do that. And it's about our working together. So, and plus, I was waking up every morning thinking about it. So if I didn't do it, it was going to bug me forever.
Right. And see, you've tapped into your core value and your mission, and it's about connection,
yes,
and consciousness and community. So that becomes your driving force. And so everything you do can be traced back to that.